This is Mental, the podcast to destigmatize mental health. I'm Bobby Temps, and each week with an inspiring guest, we delve into a factor or condition that influences the mind and how to better manage it. So, here we go.
This week, we're revisiting the theme of family mental health. And I'm not even quite sure what I'm naming this episode yet, because it's a nuanced conversation though. And we're talking about the balance of your own mental health alongside when your child is struggling, be it mental health, be it physical health. And our guest for this one, Dr. Maureen, is a general pediatrician and immunologist with a vast career caring for patients with a variety of acute and chronic health problems. That is her background professionally, and that is also something she very much went through firsthand with her daughter, as you'll hear about in the episode. That being said, it's a very uplifting conversation. There's a real kind of optimism about her, and she really sort of, although she didn't term it this, she kind of would, by my description, come from quite a sort of CBT school of thought in a lot of ways, of there are practical ways that we can manage our emotions, there are tools that we can all employ. It's not easy work, but the way that she describes it is very clear and is something that I believe in. So with that all said, I'm excited to share this one. I had a listener reach out to our email the other day asking for us to talk about some of the themes covered in today's episode. So I hope you will get a lot from it, and we'll get into this conversation with Dr. Maureen in a moment. But first, who's our sponsor? Let's find out.
Hi, I'm Dr. Maureen, and I truly appreciate you having me as a guest on your podcast today. I wanted to share with your listeners a little bit about me and my goals growing up, because I think my childhood really set the foundation for getting me into trouble later when obstacles came in my life. I grew up in a large family, had four siblings, so I was one of five kids. My parents were pretty strict parents who expected the best of us and didn't do a lot about sharing emotion. And they also never really were good about asking for help. And so those two things, I think, really set me up for problems. My goal when I was a kid was twofold. I wanted to be a mom and I wanted to be a doctor. And I can even remember playing doctor with the neighbors, where we would use dolls and I would dispense little candies as medication to treat their ailments. I was very fortunate in my life and was able to accomplish those goals. I became a mom. I graduated from medical school. Really, the trouble started when I was in residency. So I was a third-year pediatric resident. My second child, my daughter, was 6 months old at the time and was diagnosed with neuroblastoma, which is a type of pediatric cancer. The physicians had found a lump in her belly, and when that happened, my world came crashing down. I began to have lots of thoughts about, you know, I don't want my daughter to die. Why is this happening? I can't do this. This is overwhelming. And through that time, when I was focused on her getting surgery and chemo and the whole works, I continued to live in this state of being worried and overwhelmed. And I wouldn't ask for help because I felt like it was a sign of failure. And I kind of went into a very dark place, became very resentful, and was in the medical profession. So I knew enough to get help and really kind of refocus what my brain was paying attention to, rather than being worried, focusing on how I could help others became very important.
I want to pause on what you said about, you know, feeling lucky that you were able to kind of find ways to change your focus through this, because that feels like no small feat, that this is one of the worst imaginable things that could happen as a parent. So that process of finding a way through it and finding ways to kind of refocus your mind, how do you do something like that?
So that is a great question because, you know, at the time I was a doctor, I still am a doctor, but folks, when I've told that story, I've said, oh, you must have had it easier because you were a doctor and you knew what was going to happen with your daughter. There wasn't this cloud of unknown of what was going to go on in this diagnosis process. And I tell you, I was grateful for being a doctor from a mental health standpoint, but it was really hard to be a doctor and a parent because I knew exactly what was going to happen with my daughter. That I had taken care of kids with neuroblastoma, and I knew what that meant as soon as I got that diagnosis. So my brain was like off to the races at the start with this anxiety about all of these possibilities of bad things happening. The blessing really came because the folks that I interacted with on a personal basis every day were my colleagues. And so the nice part about being a doctor is some of them were mental health professionals. And not that I at the time went to them and said, you know, hey, I want to be your patient because I need help with this. But they had enough training to be able to guide me as their friend to really refocus my brain. That the, you know, when I went back to work, because I had taken a leave of absence when my daughter got sick, when I went back to work when she was doing okay, I found myself like really disliking what I was doing because I would view every patient that came through my door who had like an ear infection and a rash. And I would say to myself, like, don't they realize what I have just been through, that their kid just has an ear infection? Do they know what my kid just went through? And so verbalizing that kind of comparison to a friend who knew that, hey, that's not a healthy way to live, that was really the first step in refocusing my brain. But I also knew, like, I was being sucked of something that I loved, that I worked very hard throughout my life to become a doctor. And I was letting this bad thing, because it having a kid with cancer is not a fun thing to go through, but I was letting this obstacle destroy something that I loved and I needed to figure it out.
Mm-hmm. I really appreciate that. So my parents are doctors. And if there's two things that I've learned from that experience, is one, that doctors make terrible patients, and two,
terrible.
Because they, you know, they just kind of think they can think their way out of it, or that, you know, they're not used to being the other side of that relationship, right?
That's
so they're
right.
Just kind of cranky and annoyed that they have to be a patient sometimes.
Yes.
And the other part of it is that when it's your own child, it all goes out the window. So when I was at school and I was doing my like final exams, and, you know, it was a stressful time. I have dyslexia. It wasn't an easy time academically. I was completely focusing myself on starting a business rather than actually focusing on my exams. But whatever combination of factors, I got shingles. And, you know, this is a common thing that can surface it being stress related. And
yes,
my parents, I love them. They completely panicked. And by the end of the day, my mum was on the phone to the head of the local children's hospital, because of course she sort of somewhat knew him, and only the big boss could give me the answer for what is actually something that there's only one medication for and is distinctly relatively simple to treat.
Yes.
There's an example. So I can totally relate to all the rules go out of the window when it's your kid.
Yes.
And yet it sounds like there was a logic that came into you getting back to work and you starting to put pieces of your life back together. And you're like, I can't let this illness rob our family of joy, of passion, of my ability to help other children. And maybe that's part of what helped, that the line of your work, you saw all these other kids that also needed you to show up for them.
Right. You know, that part of what you just said was really the thing that saved me. And it was this focus on, you know, when I went to the doctor with my daughter because I was worried about her before her diagnosis, that I was lucky to have physicians who would be able to take good care of her. And it was the focus now on that I was that doctor who had the ability to like calm a parent's worry about their kid, and focusing on gifts that I had to be able to give others. I would have loved somebody to be able to take away my worry when I went to them with my daughter. And here I was, the one who was going to be able to really do that for somebody else. Like, that really was the thing that really saved me and kind of brought me joy through that time. That time, too, was also super interesting looking back at it. Like, I learned a lot about what parents of sick kids go through. The biggest takeaway was they're really good at lying. And what I mean by that is, you know, people would ask me all the time, like, hey, Maureen, how are you doing? And I'd be like, fine. You know what? Things are going okay. I'm fine. I was so far away from being fine during that time that it was chaos, not only in the house on taking care of my daughter, but there was like chaos in my head because of all of these like catastrophic things that I was worried about. And that foundation that my parents gave me of you don't show emotion and you don't ask for help, like, really set me up for failure during that time, because I was really trying to manage it by myself. And I'm grateful that I was in this community of people who knew more than me, who would be able to guide me on like, hey, why don't you like think about this? And I was able to reflect on those things.
Yeah. And I think sometimes we can have this sort of hierarchy that we apply without even realizing that you can be in this situation and think, well, who am I to center myself to talk about my struggle when it pales in comparison to what my daughter's going through? And the reality for me, at least, is it's not comparable. We're all at the eye of our own storm. And you looking after yourself is, in fact, part of you looking after her.
Right. Oh, for sure. And, you know, that is so true because of, you know, what happened later in my life. And like, speed the clock, like 12 years later, I got to be the physician who diagnosed my daughter with type 1 diabetes in a small school bathroom. I thought she had a urinary tract infection, and instead she had diabetes. Which then, you know, my world like came crashing down again. And I was quick to realize, like, I don't want to go back to that dark place that I was when she was an infant. So I was on to myself pretty quickly. But I also knew, you know, at that time, a 12-year-old with new onset diabetes is a handful. And she needed me. She needed me to help her manage her own disease. And I was never going to be able to do that effectively if I didn't take care of myself. Because, you know, it goes to like the whole put on your oxygen mask before you put on the child's oxygen mask in an airplane. And that's so true, because if I wasn't the best that I could be for myself, I wasn't going to have anything to be able to give to my daughter and be able to help her with managing all the ups and downs that come with being a teenager with a chronic illness. So it was super important to focus on myself quickly at that point in time, because she needed me to.
What was that like practically? What steps did you take?
Yeah, so I became very consumed quickly with podcasts, because I think there's a lot of very good information that's out there for people to learn from. And I learned, again, the specifics about being very conscious and aware of thought that your brain is giving you, and how your brain is helping you with protecting and keeping you in survival mode, and how to get out of survival mode and tell your brain, you know what, it's totally fine. We're not, this isn't a fight or flight situation. We've got this. Was pretty important learning along the way. I for sure took advantage of my mental health colleagues in a personal patient caregiver way. And I think mirroring the two and learning about having somebody there who was kind of my individual mental health provider, but then also having the tools that I learned through lots of life coaching podcasts were very complementary to each other. And I knew that I was going to be able to avoid the darkness that I was in years earlier and be able to really build a resilience to where I was going to be a very good parent that my daughter needed, to be able to advocate for her, to be able to, you know, tell her it was going to be okay, and to teach her that obstacles come in our lives all the time. It's choosing whether or not we let that obstacle really stop our life and we stop living because of it, or figure out a way to learn from that obstacle and create still a very beautiful life with that obstacle being part of it. And, you know, now years later, I look back and I am grateful for those experiences that I went through with my daughter. It was hard at the time, and I don't wish it upon my worst enemy, but I'm grateful for them because it's made me a better doctor. It's made me a better mother. It's given my daughter a lot of resilience in her life and a lot of passion for what she does now too.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like you were a really great example to her. And I couldn't agree more with that piece around how we react to things, because for me, that's what makes somebody them, right? That it's not the things that happen to you in life. It's how you kind of integrate them into your life story and where you go from there. You know, we all can go through shitty things. That doesn't mean we're a shitty person or we deserve it, or, you know, that has to be the end of the line for us. You know, there is that hope there. If it, you know, maybe it sounds corny, but it's hope has got me a long fucking way.
Yeah. No. And, you know, a very important concept that I now teach about is the understanding that circumstances are neutral. It's really our experience of that circumstance that makes it positive or negative.
And it's a difficult thing to wrap your head around, right? Because when you're in the center of that storm and it feels so overwhelming, of course, we label a badness over that thing, right? That this is happening to me, and why me? And what am I going to do now? How do I get out of this? Is there a future? And those are very natural, understandable thoughts that I wouldn't diminish. But there is also something for us of what we do from there. We can always find more power than in the center of the overwhelm. It feels like there's nothing we can do. And that's never quite the reality. You know, sometimes we need help. Sometimes we need medication. Sometimes therapy and different people's perspectives.
Right. Yes.
But there is something. So I really hear you, but it's such a difficult thing, right? When you're in the middle of it and you're like, how could this be neutral? Because it feels so like it's happening to me. It feels so deeply personal. Yeah, you know, diabetes doesn't have a brain. It's not targeting you specifically. Yeah. And it doesn't have to be the end.
Right. And, you know, you are absolutely correct. Like, in the thick of it, your brain is in survival mode and doesn't want this circumstance to be happening. And so, of course, it's going to be firing off all of these thoughts, just like what I had with my daughter of, I can't do this. This is way too scary. I can't do this. I don't want this to be happening to my daughter. All of these things are getting fired off by your brain. I will tell you and your listeners that an important thing to do kind of in the heat of the moment is take a breath and then ask yourself, what can I learn from this? Because sometimes asking yourself a question redirects the thoughts that your brain is generating. And so it quiets down all of these really loud voices about how bad the circumstance is in the moment and redirects it to, okay, what can I learn from Kylie having diabetes? What can I learn from Kylie having cancer? Like, there's a lot that I can learn from those experiences. But even in the moment, be able to ask yourself that question and redirect your brain can be super helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think, again, it's one of those things where it's a lot easier said than done, right? Because the default is going to be, there's nothing I can learn from this. I shouldn't be going through this. This is unfair. And you're back in the overwhelm, right?
Right.
And so, I think you're right that if we can find a way out of these thought spirals, and there's all kinds of approaches that can help, you know, a lot of people, things they have to do very fundamentally to deal with, for example, panic attacks before they can redirect thoughts at all.
Yes.
And
right.
Yet in doing so, you can have that cognitive dissonance piece, right? That if your focus is on, okay, there really must be something that I can do here. There really must be something practical that I can learn, some action that I can take. What is that thing? We are kind of inclined as people, as humans, to go with the thinking that we've decided on, to prove that there must be something. Right. If we keep thinking about it, our brain is going to find a way to be like, okay, well, I guess, you know, maybe I understand her medication. Maybe that's the first step. Maybe there's something practical, even if it doesn't feel like the whole solution.
Right. And, you know, what you were saying about like how the brain proves what you're thinking about is exactly why gratitude works to help someone kind of redirect their brain, and how gratitude practices can really increase someone's happiness. And the reason I say this, and I know you know this, that there's a part of your brain, the reticular activating system, or RAS, that is kind of the filter of your brain, and it filters what you're focusing on. So it's similar to if I went out and I was going to buy a Honda Pilot, I would be driving down the road and I would spot every Honda Pilot, because Honda Pilots were what's in my brain as that filter. If I wasn't going to buy a Honda Pilot, I'd drive down the road. And if somebody asked me, hey, how many Honda Pilots did you see? I'm like, I don't know. I have no idea. That they were there, but your reticular activating system was ignoring them because they weren't important to you. So gratitude practices work in the same way, where you, if you take a minute and write down three things that you're specifically grateful for every day, it focuses your brain on the Honda Pilots, and you'll start seeing more and more things to be grateful for. The certainly taking the step to that you need change and you want change, and how that looks for somebody, whether it's seeking a mental health provider or seeking a coach or being put on medicine or listening to podcasts or reading books, the just take the step, like commit to wanting to change, and change will happen, but it's never super quick. Like, it's not an overnight thing.
Absolutely. And with part of that is that it can be more difficult before it gets easier, right? You know, that's part of the very understandable way we can shy away from change.
For sure.
Or can, you know, confronting yes. difficult things in our life. But, you know, what you've described is really the essence of kind of brain training, as it'd be colloquially called, that, you know, you're literally practicing gratitude. And by being in that routine, yes. you know, maybe let's say every night you journal, you're going to start seeing in your day, oh, I better put that in the journal later. You'll start unconsciously yes. looking for the things. And, you know, I have a silly example of what you described, where I bought a new pair of noise cancelling headphones recently. And a real game changer. Like, if I need to run errands in the city and I'm like feeling a bit overwhelmed, I just need to shut out some stimuli. They're so helpful. But I was talking to my flatmate about that yesterday, how I can't stop seeing Sony headphones. Like, they're suddenly everywhere.
Yes, exactly.
And it's totally the bias everywhere. Of my brain. It's not that everyone has bought them on the same week as me. I'm just seeing them now that I'm literally tuned into them. Or I see somebody with the exact same yes. color and style as mine, and I feel a little bit connected to that random stranger that has no idea why I'm staring at them.
Yep, exactly. But, you know, when my daughter was sick and I have this thought of I can't do this, it becomes the filter that my brain focuses on. And so it'll look for examples of why I cannot be the mom to a sick child. And it will try to prove me right. So getting out of that thought loop is tough, but it's committing to want to get out of that thought loop. That is that very first step.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, in talking about how tough that can be, I know something you often talk about is overwhelm. You know, that can be something broadly relatable for parents. In particular, I'd be interested in when they're struggling with their mental health, and so are you.
I would say overwhelm is the big emotion that clouds the journey of a parent with a sick child, because you're overwhelmed with thoughts about what may happen. You're overwhelmed about possibilities you don't even know about. You're overwhelmed with the amount that's on your plate, where you have to accomplish medical appointments along with getting prescriptions filled at a pharmacy or taking a child to therapy. Like, overwhelm is just part of what someone is feeling when they're trying to parent a sick child. And I would say the biggest thing that a parent can do is getting organized. And what I mean about getting organized is, yes, getting physically organized, super important, but getting your mind organized is also very important. And so that's being very aware of what thoughts your brain is providing you. The thing with overwhelm, though, is that I said, you know, it's part of the journey of a parent with a sick child. And that's true, but it doesn't need to be the driver of the car on that journey. So it's transitioning from having it be in the driver's seat to like putting it in the trunk of the car and being like, okay, it can come along for the ride and it can be here, but I'm not letting it drive my car. And so making that transition as a parent, again, takes some practice and time, but understanding the importance of it, because you also then need to be dealing with the overwhelming emotions that your child is experiencing, where it comes to being overwhelmed about not knowing what to expect when they go to the doctors, not knowing what to expect when medical terminology gets tossed around, not knowing what to expect when they start on a new medicine or that sort of thing, along with all of the emotions of being a kid. So again, it goes back to taking care of yourself first and then being able to allow your kid to have open communication with you and express their emotions, which, you know, going back to what I said at the beginning, I think that's not the household I grew up in, that my parents didn't want to hear that I was scared or felt like I couldn't do something. Emotions are part of life, and we need these opportunities to teach our kids to process emotions and that it's okay to be scared sometimes. What does scared feel like? Do you feel it in your chest? Do you feel it in your belly? Are you feeling it in your throat? And having a child describe those physical aspects of feeling an emotion really helps them with processing it. And that will help them with being overwhelmed by their own medical issues.
I really appreciate that. That's something I've talked about before on the show, how to our knowledge, we're the only species that can feel an emotion about an emotion. You know, so for me, that's been times in my life where I felt depressed, then I'm feeling depressed again. You know, and it doesn't help things. And so instead, you know, I think there really is something to that. As far as it goes against our natural way of thinking, looking at certain experiences more neutrally can then shift from being a, okay, your child is scared, they're scared, I'm scared, to they're scared, now what? What can we do about that? As opposed to, you know, there's a difference between sitting in the fear for practical reasons, because it's okay to feel this sometimes, and what do we do about when we feel scared, versus, okay, you're scared, that's scary, push it away. It's too scary. Push it down, push it over there. Let's get rid of it. Never talk about it again. You know, they're two extremes. And in this conversation, we've addressed a lot of, you know, the importance of looking after your mental health in relation to being a parent. What about, and I want you to maybe pause and think about this, what about the value of looking after your mental health just for you?
So that's important too. It's tough, I will say, to separate me as a person from me as a parent, because it's such a, it's like part of my being. Even though like my daughter is grown now, doesn't live in my house, but I'm still her mom. And the thing I would say though is, especially now, I know how important mental health is for me personally, because my being here on this earth has meaning and purpose, not just being a mom, but being a doctor, being a coach to people, being able to provide a service outside of just being a parent. And, you know, I know that life has its ups and downs. Like, life would be really, really boring if it was all roses and unicorns, because we would have no contrast. And without contrast, you're going to be bored. So I'm grateful for the ups and downs, that I know that life is going to be 50% good and 50% bad. And my definition of happiness is really being able to fully experience the ups and downs of life. So knowing, yes, my mental health is important for me to be able to live this full human experience and have me be happy.
Yeah, absolutely. And I found that's been a big breakthrough for me personally, learning to embrace emotions that I spent a good chunk of my life running from, that actually there can be something quite beautiful about sort of sitting in them and, you know, doing so in a practical way versus a, you know, a depression sort of really kind of living their way. You know, that these things that you've said, it's all transient. You know, the good stuff comes and goes.
Yes.
The bad stuff also comes and goes, you know, if we let it. And that's where I think we'll pause on for our chat today. So if people want to find more about your work, you also wrote a whole book, which I think a lot of parents could find helpful.
Yeah, so I wrote a book called Reclaiming Life. It is a guide for parents of chronically ill children. And it's a book that has stories about my daughter through her cancer journey, through her diabetes journey, and also stories of patients I've taken care of, along with tips that readers can start implementing today to help bring about that change that we all kind of strive for in personal development. So the book is on Amazon. I would love for your listeners to check it out. I also have a website, MaureenMichelleMD.com, where they can get more information about me too.
Perfect. Thank you so much. And in a moment, we'll have a little debrief for our premium subscribers on Apple Podcasts. But for now, thank you. Thanks so much.
No, thank you.
Thank you for listening. For a list of our recommended resources, visit mentalpodcast.co.uk. And remember, we are in no way a substitute for qualified counselling or other mental health support. Our show is edited and produced by the brilliant Pete Murta, with licensed music by NetSky. Links in the description. Speak to you next Thursday, and remember, you are enough.